Burns and Gambo starts now.
Straight up 2 o'clock on this Thursday afternoon. Good afternoon and welcome into today's edition of the Burns and Gambo Show here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station as we are live from the Akshin Community Studios. My name is Dave Burns alongside the one, the only, John Gambadoro. Happy Valentine's Day.
You know, I was just going to say, it sounds weird for me to wish you happy Valentine's Day.
To everyone out there on this day of love.
Happy Valentine's Day. Except in Arizona, it's difficult because it's like the third loneliest place in the country.
I read that today.
Did you read that today?
Yes.
A lot of lonely people out there. The third loneliest in the whole country.
That's too bad.
I was just reading that. Yeah. Arizona. The number three loneliest place to live on Valentine's Day is the state of Arizona.
What, two or higher?
It didn't
go that far into the study. We don't know who else.
The District of Columbia is also home to our nation's loneliest group of people.
Well, it's politics.
Yeah,
it's,
on the opposite side, only 38% of Utah residents are single, making the Beehive State the number one most romantic.
Wow.
We live in a very loveless state. Lonely people.
Not on this show.
Yeah.
You're happily married. I'm happily married. Jordan Bird is going to be happily married here pretty soon. Yeah. Oh, this is a big day for Jordan. His last Valentine's Day before the big day.
The big wedding.
I hope you.
That's the beautiful thing about getting married in 2 months. Everything we can say, oh, let's not do that because we need to save money. So we're not doing anything because we need to save money.
Well played. It is also the birthday for the great state of Arizona. Arizona was created on Valentine's Day.
Was
formalized as a state on Valentine's Day.
I believe
1912. So this is our birthday. This is the state of Arizona's birthday.
Wow.
So happy.
Learn that today,
happy
too.
Happy Valentine's Day. Happy birthday. It's too bad. It's too bad none of our basketball teams were in the mood to celebrate last night. It's too bad none of them were in a good mood about all this stuff. God. Feeling the love. Let's tell you what our top story of the day is here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Going deep. Today's top story, Burns and Gambo.
Going deep with, and it's hard to know which one to start with. We just kind of drew straws in the prep room and decided we're going to go with ASU first. Could have just as easily been the Suns for how bad they were last night.
I'm worried.
Yeah, you should be.
I'm officially worried.
Should be.
About ASU's chances. I spoke with Casey Jacobson this morning. Casey's got the BYU game today. He was traveling, but we chatted for a while this morning. He did the game last night. And, he thinks right now it's a one-bid league. He goes, I really do. He believes there's only just Washington right now. He thinks that the nail in the coffin for ASU wasn't the loss last night. He goes, that Washington State loss was just so bad. It's going to be really hard. The net rating was in the 70s before the game last night. I don't know if there's an updated new net rating, but they were in the 70s before the loss to Colorado. And I watched that whole game last night. I went back and forth between the two and then rewatched what I didn't get to see with the two this morning. But I was going back and forth and tweeting about both games, and they lose to Colorado 77-73. Tyler Bay was unbelievable. The McKinley kid was terrific. Colorado couldn't miss a shot in the second half. And now ASU's got six games left, Burnsy. And I mean, do they have to run the table?
Do they have to run the table? Well, they're not going to run the table.
That's
going to
be impossible.
I mean, they're not going to do that. Do they need to do that? It's going to take something. Unless the bubble itself continues to be so poor and so bad that the committee has no choice but to put them in, because by comparison, they're just as blah as everybody else is. I mean, at this point, in some ways, I almost feel like that's ASU's best bet, is not so much what they're going to do, but what all of these bubble teams around college basketball are going to do, because they're just as mediocre. They're just as bad. They don't play in as bad a conference maybe as ASU does, but their resumes, I mean, at the end of the day, ASU still has that win over Kansas. ASU still has that win over Washington. But boy, they've got some bad losses. Okay, think about last night's loss. Jerry Palm, who runs his bracketology on CBS Sports, he called last night's loss against Colorado the second best loss they've had all year. in terms of some of the damage.
Four losses.
Some of the damage that's been done by the other losses were so much worse. What happened last night wasn't actually that bad for
68
ASU.
Still get in. You still got to find 68 teams to put in there. Like you do. You have to find 68 teams. You know, I'm talking to Casey, I go, what do you think they need to do to get in? He goes, run the table and get to the conference tournament final. I go, geez, really? Run the table and then get to the conference final. Because he just like, the Washington State loss to him was just so bad. The net rating, the fact that there aren't any really, like, any good, like, the only chance they have at another quad one win the rest of the way is Oregon. But his point was Oregon is so close to falling out of quad one. And so if they lose, like, if Oregon splits their next two, they fall out of quad one. So that might not even be a quad one win. There aren't a lot of opportunities to even get quad one wins now to say we've got this many quad one wins.
To bolster up their resume, right.
So that hurts them right now. It's yeah, so you know, he said, look, I don't even think they're on the fence. I'm pretty sure that this is only a one-bid league right now unless somebody besides Washington can win the Pac-12 championship. But, you know, I said, what do you think of ASU? Because I think they're the second best team in the league. By far, I think they're the second best team in this league.
Wow.
So they are capable.
That says an awful lot about the league, though, doesn't it?
Here's my question on ASU.
That says an awful lot about the conference.
It does.
The second
it
best
does.
Team.
He thinks they're the second best team in this conference, but he thinks it's a one-bid league. And I'm watching that game last night. It's just frustrating as hell. And Bobby Hurley, my God, does that guy lose his mind on every single play?
Every single play.
Does he lose his mind on every play?
Yeah, every single play. To the point where, did you hear Ray Anderson this morning on Newsmakers Week with Doug and Wolf?
I heard the comments, yeah.
Yeah, he says, look, I've talked to Bobby Hurley about his temper.
We have actually, no question, talked about the volatility, learning to control the emotions in times of stress, realizing that, you know, the officials and others in the Pac-12 and in these major conferences, very frankly, they don't care if you're Bobby Hurley. You're a coach in the Pac-12. Mm. This is a big boy conference. There's a lot of good coaches in the Pac-12. And so the fact that you're Bobby Hurley doesn't give you any additional leverage or advantage with us. So don't think that getting in their heads and haranguing them unnecessarily is going to do anything but put you in a bad spot. And so we talk about that.
Moderately tough talk out of Ray Anderson today for
his
basketball
right.
coach.
I mean, it's like, Bobby, like every play, like, do you have to like pick and choose your battles, dude? Like, you can't go berserk on every call that goes against you.
Yeah.
Like, every call. Like, you know, and I was talking with Casey like this morning, Casey Jacobson, and he was saying, man, I never had a coach like that. I mean, I never had one, but you know, he was saying like it is crazy just how mild mannered he is off the court, because he's so mild mannered off the court, and then just the rage on the court. You know, I call it being a lunatic, and then how he acts on the court is just so different. I just think he loses his mind on at least half the plays in the game.
Yeah.
At least half. I mean, and there are times where you'll go seven plays in a row where you'll look over and you'll just see him just blowing up and just going crazy and berserk and yelling and screaming. And, man, you can't do that all the time. You can't. You can't do that all the time.
No, you can't.
It's going to blow up in your face.
And yet he does do it all the time. Now, I think it's certainly better in college basketball to be like that than it is the NBA, because you're only going to have these players for 2, 3, 4 years. You know, I mean, they're just about when they're going to get sick of you, they're going to graduate and leave, and a new class is going to come in, and they'll have 4 years to get sick of you. So I think if he tried that, not that he's going to the NBA, I'm just saying that in college basketball, you can get away with being like that a little more. But these officials, I can't imagine they have a whole lot of tolerance. To Ray's point, I can't imagine that they're giving him any credit or any leeway because he's Bobby Hurley. Look, this team, they can't shoot. They can't shoot.
Couldn't last night.
38% in the second half.
Couldn't shoot last night.
They're among
night.
The worst shooting teams in the conference across every single metric, whether it's field goal percentage, three-point percentage, free throw percentage. They can't shoot. And if they could, we're not having this conversation.
4-2, and they don't win the conference championship?
You go 4-2 in these last six, and they don't win the conference championship. That would leave them at what, 11-7 in the conference, and 20-10 Too close to call. Too close to call. I don't know. Because so much of what you're asking depends on every other bubble team in America and what they do.
And what teams win conference tournaments that weren't supposed to.
Now, I'll tell you this. As of Monday, so Monday was 2 days after they beat Washington.
Okay.
As of Monday, Jerry Palm, in his bracket, and I haven't seen any update. I think we get a fresh batch of updated brackets tomorrow. Jerry Palm, in his most recent bracket, had them as an 11 seed. In, not playing a first four game, not one of the last four teams
before,
in.
This was before
last night. This was after Washington and before last night. He had them in as an 11 seed, presumably one of the last teams in, but not one of those teams playing in one of those first four games. How did last night's loss move them on that line? I don't know, but you're right. If there's an upset in a conference tournament, there goes a spot.
5-1, I'll feel better. 4-2, I don't know.
I don't know.
4-2, I'm going to say it's
going to be, you're going to be sweating this one right down to the end if you're ace.
You might not get in at 4-2. I think you got to go 5-1 to give yourself the best chance, because their net rating was in, you know, like 70 something going into the game last. It was 71. No, it was 72 going into the game. Now they lost. It's going to drop. Mm-hmm. So their net rating is going to be 75, 76.
Too bad. It's just too bad where we thought the season was going to go and how it's ending up exactly where we were a year ago. If you want to get your hands on Coyotes, ASU basketball, or Suns tickets, visit the rewards page and click Game Day Tickets for your chance to win. The Phoenix Suns, meanwhile, have tied a franchise record. They don't want any part of it. And just to illustrate how bad things have been, just look at the last month of the season. We'll explain next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Chew on this number for a second before we start talking about this losing streak for the Phoenix Suns.
I'm guessing, is it the date, the one since January 1st?
There's an even better one than that.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
Okay? It's not, it's the, but I did.
The January 1st,
the January
one, was
1st
good.
One is pretty bad. I'll give you that one too, but let me give you this one because this one's fresher, all right? In their last 85 games, so the 59 they've played this year and the final 26 of the year before, okay? The last 85 games the Suns have played, they have won 13 of them, and they've lost 72.
Oh, my God.
Of those losses, intern's laughing. He's like, he's doing the math in his head. Yeah, it's bad. Of those losses, 25% of them, 25%.
By 20 or more?
Yes.
Ugh.
By 20 or more. That's what we're talking about here. That's what
where
we're
do you
living
even
wanna, right
where
now.
Where do you even want to start here? I mean, we're 15 games in a row lost. Not competitive at all last night. I mean, absolutely not competitive. Blown out of the building by the Clippers. Their bench guys, they could have just played their bench and it would have beat them. I mean, Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell were just clobbered. Lou Williams couldn't miss a shot. Montrezl Harrell was a beast. You know, offensively, defensively. I mean, I got beat like a drum last night. Mm-hmm. I literally got beat like a drum last night.
Where do I want to start?
Where do you start?
My eyes just kind of naturally gravitate towards a couple of things. Number one, the comments that Devin Booker made before the game. And we're going to talk more specifically about Booker a little later in the show. But if you're going to ask me where my eyes go towards, Devin Booker's comments before the game, quote, "Be professionals. Every day you come out here and live your dream. Come out here and play with heart, play with pride, play with passion," close quote. I didn't see any of that out of Devin Booker last
night. Shut down by Patrick Beverley. I mean, we've talked about Patrick Beverley a lot. He did not score his first basket until there were 39 seconds left in the first half. He missed his first 7 shots. He went 2-for-10 from the field. He had 10 points. I mean, this is your max player, your best player, and he didn't give you any real effort last night. I mean, just couldn't get anything out of Devin Booker last night. Kelly Oubre was great off the bench, 28 points. He was terrific. But, you know, I was too busy watching Lou Williams score every time he touched the ball, and Montrezl Harrell every time he touched the ball. Lou Williams had 30 points. 30 points, 10 assists, Lou Williams.
Yeah.
And, you know, and they don't pay anything for that. You'd be shocked. If you go look at the salaries of their bench guys, Pat Beverley, Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell, they're not paying anything for those guys.
Nope.
Like, they're not. Like, I looked at it this morning. Like, I just wonder, what are they paying for their bench? I was like, geez, not paying anything. Montrezl Harrell, great player off the bench. Lou Williams, great player off the bench. Pat Bev, great. They're not paying anything
$5 million, $6 million, $7 million. Like, they're not paying any money for these guys. Yeah. I'm like, oh, my God. How do you have a bench that good and you don't pay any money?
The second thing, and I'm going to full credit to Jarrett Carlin, who's the producer of the Bickley and Murata show. He said this during their show today, and I hadn't thought about this when I was watching the game last night. You could make an argument that the two best players on that floor last night should have been Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton if you look at the two rosters side by side. That the two...
Ayton's not ready to be the best player on anything yet. I disagree with
that.
He's not ready. He's too young. Skill
and ability.
Did you see what Montrezl Harrell did to him last night?
But he made him look foolish. Okay, but Montrezl Harrell does not have the...
It doesn't matter. He's just not ready to be a best player.
Okay.
He's not ready to be.
The best player.
Yes.
And you lost by 24.
Yes. I'll agree with that.
The best player...
But I can't ever put, like, DeAndre Ayton's one of the best... He's not.
Clippers roster's not that great. Look at that roster up and down. Zubac had 16 points. Lou Williams had 30. He played like 22 minutes. That Clippers roster.
Gallinari had two. All those guys are better than DeAndre
Ayton. They just traded their best player a week ago.
Tobias Harris.
They traded their best player a week ago to Philadelphia.
But all those players you mentioned, right? Those players are all better than DeAndre. DeAndre Ayton's not ready to be a best player anywhere yet.
I just don't think that much of that Clippers roster. I don't think that much of it. And they humiliated the Phoenix Suns.
Humiliated them. Yeah.
15 game losing streak. And
God, I kind of wish it was the end of the season instead of the All Star break.
And now they're at Cleveland when the All Star break's over. To try to win to avoid the worst losing streak in the history of the organization. This ties it from a year ago.
And it's at Cleveland?
And it's at Cleveland. It's at Cleveland.
They've lost 12 straight to the Clippers. No, seriously. Yeah. The Suns have lost 12 straight games to the Clippers.
All right, so let's do a little this is your life if you're the Phoenix Suns. Here's everything that's gone down during this 15-game losing streak, all right?
Give it to me straight.
Buzzer beater losses. There's been three of them.
Siakam with 6 seconds. Siakam with five. Siakam with four. Three, two. Siakam on the drive. His shot is good. And the game is over if that counts. If he got it off in time. Rose against Bridges. Here's the 18-footer. He hit it. Derrick Rose has been the man of the hour. Rudy Gay waits 3 seconds, 2 seconds. Gay throws up a shot. He got it. Rudy Gay has just won the game for San Antonio.
Toronto, Minnesota,
and San Antonio.
And the Spurs. Three buzzer beaters in those 15 losses.
And then, you know, every time they play a game like that, we're like, oh, man, could they tease you? Like, look, they show that they're capable of competing with, you know, decent teams that have good players. Toronto's a good team. San Antonio's a good team. We've talked about how they could tease you. The Suns team can at times go out. Now, a lot of it has to do with the opponent. The opponent undervalues the Suns. They don't look at them as a real threat, and they don't go out and they don't play as hard. And that's part of the reasons the Suns could be in some of those games.
Long showers in Denver.
What about this air just caused the meeting or whatever was happening?
What meeting?
What was happening in here?
I just showered. It just seemed like a longer cooling off period than normal.
I like long showers.
The long showers in Denver, walks in the park. Remember that?
Candlelight dinners.
The post game meeting.
Love in the rain.
Do you like pina coladas?
It's a song.
No.
Do you like pina coladas?
I know, but it's raining. It's Valentine's Day. There are things I didn't need you to say out loud. And that was one of them. That was without question one of them.
The song I was singing. It's Valentine's Day. I'm just, you know.
Keep that part to yourself over there. Keep that part to yourself.
Singing a song.
So then. They play the Hawks at home, one of the worst teams in the NBA. The Hawks are on the second night of a back-to-back.
Collins killed them. Remember the power forward in that game?
Collins killed. Trae Young took over in the fourth quarter. They called that game a must-win game going in, and instead, afterwards, Devin Booker dropped these lines on all of us.
Two in a row that we dropped. But you have to move on from it. Just trying to remain positive at all times. Lead this young group the best I can. You know, hope we realize, you know, how important, you know, attention to detail is and coverages and just, you know, the will to win. So, you know, we need to learn that. I always say, you know, can't get comfortable losing. I think we're comfortable with it right now.
We can't get comfortable with losing. I think we're comfortable with that right now. That was after that Hawks game.
Yep.
You had the trade deadline circus, so that was fun. Lonzo Ball for about 72 hours.
Hey, if you get all three, I guarantee you will get championships. If I don't, I will jump off the roof on my knees. I won't even put my feet down.
Of course, LeVar. That was.
I'm not afraid of Jesus. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Afraid of LeBron? I ain't afraid of Jesus.
He's not. I am.
Favorite line of all time right there. Yeah, I probably am a little too. And in the middle of, oh my God, I forgot about Booker meeting Jorgie Jang in the tunnel.
Oh, I was there for that.
You know,
game,
right?
Yeah.
Getting pulled by the waistband.
Yeah.
That happened during the losing streak.
Meet me in Temecula.
Booker got 5,000 career points. Didn't care.
I don't care anymore. You know, it's like 2,000, 3,000, 4,000. It's almost the same thing. And, you know, now I'm just in a point in my career where, you know, I just want to be a winner. You know, I've done the individual accolades countless numbers of times. So, you know, for me now is figuring out how to win. And we're not doing that right now. So, you know, until we start winning, you know, that's when all those things will matter to me.
And also during this 15-game losing streak, and I guess credit to the politicians and to the people, because in the midst of all of this awful basketball, they were able to separate the basketball from the need for renovations to that building.
And get it done.
And they got it done.
I'm excited for the citizens of Phoenix. I'm excited for the Suns. And, you know, it's a relationship that has worked really well for the last 26 years, and it should continue. You know, we are the Phoenix Suns, and this is where we belong. And I'm appreciative of everybody that's worked on this, and obviously the support of the mayor and the council and the city.
What a month it's been.
It's, yeah. What a year it's been. My God. I mean, the organization feels like it's just spiritually dead. It just feels like it is. It's spiritually dead. They cannot break this culture of losing to save their lives. They don't know how. The game plan of patience. You know how hard it is to only have 11. Their winning percentage is like 186. You know how many bad teams there are in the NBA? And you have 11 wins? You know how hard it is to only win 11 games?
Luke Lipinski took
their... It's hard.
He took their win percentage, and to put it in baseball terms,
yeah,
it'd be like a baseball team winning about 30 games.
Which has never, ever
which
happened.
It just doesn't happen. Yeah.
No.
The Arizona Cardinals need a playmaker. One would appear to be available. With all of his baggage, can Antonio Brown be a good fit here? We'll talk about that next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Happy Thursday to you. Thanks for hanging out with us on the Burns and Gambo Show on this wet and rainy Valentine's afternoon here in Phoenix,
Happy
Arizona.
Valentine's Day.
The Pittsburgh Steelers and Antonio Brown, the saga continues. We'll see if the saga ends anytime soon with a trade. I know there's been a lot of speculation. In fact, I saw one gambling website today actually listed the Arizona Cardinals as the betting favorites to get Antonio Brown in a trade this offseason. Yes, they do. And joining us right now in the Colter Automotive Group Sports Line, he's been covering the Pittsburgh Steelers for many, many years. Wrote a terrific column about it a couple of days ago about Antonio Brown in specific. And joining us right now from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette from 93.7 FM, KDKA AM, he is Ed Bouchette. He joins us here on the Colter Automotive Group Sports Line. Ed, I'm Dave. This is Gambo. Welcome to the show. How are you today?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah, I really enjoyed your column the other day, Ed, just talking about how it's time to cut ties with Antonio Brown, and you brought up a lot of reasons why. But give me in a nutshell the reasons why Antonio Brown can't return to the Steelers.
Well, the top reason is he abandoned them before the last game of the season, which could have been very critical to their chances of making the playoffs. And there's just been so much building up. It's like what's that one game where you keep piling blocks on and blocks
Jenga.
On and blocks on until
it's,
yeah,
it's Jenga,
finally
yeah.
They topple over. And I think that's where the Steelers are right now. I mean, the allegations that came out recently about a domestic issue in Florida. There was another thing in Florida back in the spring where he allegedly was throwing stuff off a balcony.
And almost hit a kid, right? Didn't he almost hit a toddler?
Well, that's alleged.
Yeah.
I wasn't there, but, you know, it just keeps, you know, going 100 miles an hour on a suburban road in Pittsburgh. It's not a big highway. It's all piling up. And the latest now is not the latest, but what happened at the end of the year I don't know. I think they've reached the point of no return with him.
Ed Bouchette from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette covered the Steelers for many years, our guest here on the Burns and Gambo Show, talking about Antonio Brown. So with that in mind, where does it stand right now with the Steelers? Are they listening? Are they actively trying to move him? Have they even granted him permission to seek a trade? What kind of give me the latest of what's going on with this story right now as you know it, Ed.
Yeah, I don't think they've granted him permission to seek a trade, and I don't know that they're pounding the phones doing it. You know, they have until March 17th, basically, when his $2.5 million roster bonus is due. If they don't want to pay that, the trade can't happen, obviously, until March 13th. But they can get one, you know, in hand, like the Baltimore Ravens did with Flacco. I think the combine is going to be a big time for it when all the general managers are out there and they, you know, go to dinner at night and have drinks and start talking stuff. I really think that's when something might get done.
What do you, in your opinion, what is fair compensation to the Steelers for Antonio Brown, and what should they expect to get if they really want to move him this offseason?
Yeah, they were expecting a first-round pick. I think there's too much baggage there now. I think they might be able to get a second, you know, a team that, and I know you guys are interested in the Cardinals, but I'm thinking more of a team that, and I know that I saw the same odds that you did. The Cardinals were the favorite, but I think a team that thinks it's maybe a great receiver away from a Super Bowl. You know, I mean, he's 31 years old. Why would the Cardinals want?
But they don't
to rebuild. You know,
yeah,
with Antonio Brown.
I don't believe they. I don't think they have any interest in him. I don't think they have any interest in him because of what the price will be. You know, the Cardinals are trying to rebuild. They're trying to don't want to give away a draft pick for a 31-year-old guy making $13 million who happens to be a major jerk. So I think, you know, I honestly don't believe that the Cardinals will be in play for Antonio Brown based on what I've heard.
Yeah, I agree with you. I just don't see the Cardinals. I could see even the 49ers. You know, Garoppolo would like to have him out there. I think they can be a good team with a couple fixes out there, and but I don't know that there's going to be a lot of suitors. I really don't, and I don't know that the Steelers are going to want to bring him back under any circumstances. So that price could drop.
Sure.
Real quickly.
You know what the feeling here, Ed, is, and I'll tell you why. The Cardinals desperately need wide receiver help. Their wide receivers were not very good. But a lot of people feel that because Larry Fitzgerald is the consummate professional, you know, he's not a diva wide receiver. He is a consummate professional, well-respected around the league, that if Antonio Brown came here, that he could almost fall in line under Larry Fitzgerald. I mean, you know, you've been around Antonio Brown. It doesn't seem to me like he's that type of guy that would fall in line. Do you think that's possible?
Well, here's what I think. That Antonio is going to want fervently, and he's been early on he was a good teammate, and some of the teammates still swear by him, that he's going to fervently want to prove the Steelers wrong, prove that he is a great receiver no matter who the quarterback is. And I think that he will knuckle down and try his best to be a good citizen, a good teammate, a good player for that team. So in that sense, I think maybe some of his past will be in his past, and he won't repeat it.
Yeah. Ed Bouchette, who's been covering the Steelers for many, many years, our guest here on the Burns and Gambo Show. We're talking about Antonio Brown, whether he could end up here or not. You would know this 20 times better than me. I've got a suspicion, but I'm going to ask you because you're the source of knowledge here on this one. I saw somebody on social media today make the argument that in terms of draft picks, the New England Patriots would be very well positioned to blow the Steelers away with an offer. I can't see that in a million years. Can you?
No.
Okay.
I can't. That would surprise me. It would surprise me if they did it, which would be a surprise, that the Steelers would accept it. They don't want to see him in New England, I don't think.
He is still one of the premier wide receivers. His numbers are remarkable. He's such a great player. And I do, you know, distractions aside, look, Kareem Hunt has a team already. You know, he's already got a team that he's on. So,
And somebody's going to give up something for Antonio Brown just because of the greatness. I mean, it is hard to find talent at that wide receiver spot as great as Antonio Brown.
Yeah, they will. There'll be somebody out there. I don't know how much you're going to give up. Remember now, the Browns gave up nothing for Hunt and didn't give him a big contract either. But somebody will give up something, and that's why I really believe the Steelers want to get rid of him so bad. Now, they want to maximize what they can get, but at this point, if there's no offers, no really good offers out there, they'd just take the best that they can get.
Ed, last one for me. You know, if it was just one guy, we'd look at it and say maybe it's an isolated incident, but it's Le'Veon Bell, it's Antonio Brown, and there are some people that feel that it's more of a Ben Roethlisberger problem, the way they treat Ben Roethlisberger, that he doesn't work as hard and that he's the real diva in that organization. Is there a Ben Roethlisberger problem with the Steelers?
No, I don't believe that to be true. And Art Rooney's reaction when we sat down with him in January to go over kind of the season, he very much said he wants to get Ben signed up to a contract extension because he's due one. I mean, he has I forget how many years he has, 2 years left on his contract. They want to extend him, and he was very enthusiastic about that. So, no, there's no problem with Ben.
All right, Ed, we appreciate the time as always. Thanks for joining us. We appreciate it. Enjoyed your insight, and we look forward to talking to you sometime in the future.
All right, fellas, thanks for having me.
Got Ed Bouchette joining us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Coulter Cadillac, Buick, GMC, Nissan, and Infiniti. Doesn't think like you. It doesn't think Antonio Brown is a good fit for the Arizona Cardinals.
I don't think
thinks
so.
He needs to go somewhere where they are a wide receiver away. But I also thought what was interesting was that the Steelers are not going to get what they think they're going to get.
Yeah, you're not getting a first rounder.
There's not going to be much of a market
out
there.
Try to maximize value, but you may not be able to get a first rounder.
And yet, he also said that when he gets to that new team, he's going to knuckle down. He's going
to
work hard.
To show proof.
He's
going
to want to prove the Pittsburgh Steelers wrong. So, I mean,
that's a good sign.
Maybe there's a good, I'm not saying for the Cardinals necessarily, but there's a good investment to be made if you only have to give up second, third round pick, and you're going to get a guy who's going to play hard, play clean, play by the rules because he wants to prove them wrong. I don't know.
Just happens sometimes.
It does. Yeah, it does.
It does happen sometimes, but I highly doubt he's coming here.
Have you subscribed to the Burns and Gambo podcast? We hope you do. Subscribe right now on your iPhone or your Android. You'll never miss any of the show. The Burns and Gambo podcast brought to you this week by your Valley Chevy dealer. Ketel Marte is going to get the first crack at it, we think. But are the Diamondbacks looking for additional center field help? You're going to hear what Mike Hazen had to say about that next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
The Burns and Gambo Need to Know Twitter poll presented by Sanderson Ford.
Spencer Keatsman is in for Sarah today with today's Twitter poll question of the day. I have yet to see it. I don't know. This is going to be a surprise for me. I'm not sure what it is. Hi, Spence.
Hey, guys. A little bit of a surprise. Real quick, we got the Twitter question of the year. Somebody wants to know if Alex Avila's batting average is higher than the Suns' winning percentage from this past season.
Oh, my God.
The answer as of now is no, but it could be. Avila hit 165. Right now, the Suns are batting 229.
Alex Avila had a lower batting average than the Suns' winning percentage?
Right,
why
as of now,
Alex
yeah.
Alex Avila playing?
Oh, my God.
That's the question of the year so far on Twitter, I think.
Oh, my God. Oh, my
God. The poll question.
Whoever put those two numbers together, bravo. I'm going to slow clap right now. Bravo. Way to go.
Alex Avila had a lower batting average than the Suns' winning percentage. Let that sink in.
Yeah. And he's set to make $4 million this year. Sit on that one, Gambo. All right, the question is...
You can make $4 million. Only in America, $4 million for batting 167.
All right, what's the actual question,
well, we're gonna show Doug and Wolf some love here. Which GM interview won your heart during Doug and Wolf's Newsmakers Week on Arizona Sports? 36% say Steve Keim, 31% Mike Hazen, 22% John Chayka, and 11% James Jones.
Ooh, James Jones, not getting a lot of love there. I'd say probably what won Mike Hazen a lot of points was what he said, unprompted, on his own, at the very end of his interview with Doug and Wolf this morning on Newsmakers Week, about September and how last season ended.
I know that from a preparation manager, coach's standpoint, that's going to be there. I know our players are hungry to look at, to take what happened last year and do something about that now. I think they've had to chew on it all offseason. Nobody likes what happened in September last year. It's embarrassing. We were in first place for 5 months. We finished 8 games out of first place. I mean, that's not something that sits well with anybody.
On his own. Wasn't even asked about it. That's just what he brought up. That's what he said on his own.
Yeah, they were embarrassed by it. It's terrible. The way they finished. Because they won their first 9 series in a row. And they offered this unbelievable start. And then they were in first place. And we talked about it, like almost every month. There was like 1 month they weren't. But, you know, like April, May, June, July. Like almost every month when the start of it, they were in first place. And then the end of August and the Matt Kemp, Archie Bradley game. And then the next day, the Matt Kemp, Archie Bradley game. And it just seemed like all the moves that Hazen made to solidify the bullpen and try to shore it up, they all, like, none of them worked. Not no fault of his own. I mean, he brought in players that were supposedly good players, but they just couldn't get anybody out when they were here.
Andrees
was terrible. Jeff Diekman was terrible. They weren't any good.
I wasn't all that thrilled with the Andrees move. I liked the Diekman move. I looked at the numbers and said, man, that guy can help. Brad Ziegler, that guy can help. Eduardo Escobar, that guy can help. He's a poor man's Manny Machado. I remember at the time thinking that Mike Hazen, outside of going to get Manny Machado, has done everything he can humanly possibly do to make this team better in the areas it needs to be for a run in September. He's bolstered the bullpen. He did it 3 times over in those 3 guys. He added a bat in the infield to help take over for Jake Lamb with all the injuries. I was impressed with the work he did, and then we saw the results of it, and Diekman wasn't very good. Ziegler was good. Andrees was terrible. Eduardo Escobar was okay. He kind of faded at the end. But most importantly, Archie got tired. Boxberger got tired. Troy Lovello pushed all the wrong buttons, and it all just fell apart. I mean, for a team to be in first place with a month to go in the season, and they finished, what, 7.5 at a first? 8 games at a first when it was all said and done? I mean, that's embarrassing is a strong word, but it was tough to stomach. It was tough to watch. They just came apart in
that
month.
They just couldn't figure it out. There were other players, you know, that they could have got to. You know, there were some good relievers on that Texas team, you know, and they ended up with Diekman. But, you know, you looked at it, okay, you got a lefty, you got a guy who's, you know, this guy's pretty good. He should be able to help you, but he didn't pitch well, and Andrees didn't pitch well, and Ziegler ended up being like that best guy. So there were some definite issues.
But yeah.
Now we'll go into this season, and obviously he grabbed Holland to address more bullpen needs, and that should be a good move to help them.
As far as the center field position goes, that's something that Mike Hazen spoke a lot about when he was on with Doug and Wolf this morning. He believes Ketel Marte can excel, not just in center field, but at multiple spots.
I think Marte is a very, very talented player, and he's a smart player, mm-hmm. and he's got great instincts, and we feel like Marte is going to be able to play short, second, and center field for
okay.
us. We look at Marte the way I would look at Chris Bryant, Chris Taylor, those types of players that are excel in multiple positions and are really, really good players, and that's how we view him.
We've talked about guys that have to have bounce back years, right? Steven Souza.
Yep.
Robbie Ray.
Yep.
What about the natural progression of Ketel Marte? What if he develops into the best player on this team? What if he's a bona fide all-star? Like, we don't discuss that. We think, well, if Souza could bounce back, if Robbie Ray could bounce back, if, you know, if Jake Lamb could have a... Well, what if just Marte becomes the player they always thought he was and he becomes an all-star this year?
I think that's a fair and valid point, especially when, I can't remember who it was a couple of weeks ago, one national baseball writer at ESPN suggested that, you know, he was like picking a breakout player for each team. He picked Ketel Marte. And said, if you look at all the metrics, if you look at all the numbers, if you look at the results, how hard he hits the ball, how fast he runs, that this is a guy.
Strikeout to walk ratio.
Yeah, who could be poised for a major breakout. And you're right. I don't, for whatever reason, I don't look at Ketel Marte and think of that. And maybe I should. Maybe we all should. Maybe we should look at Ketel Marte as a guy who isn't going to be stagnant and isn't going to put up those numbers every single year and instead has room to grow and grow and grow. I mean, that contract that they signed him to could end up being one of the most valuable contracts, not only on their roster, but in baseball, if he produces the way he could. They've got him locked up through a big chunk of the early prime years of his career for not a lot of money.
Is there any reason he can't hit 300 with 25 homers, 85 RBIs, and 30 stolen bases?
The only reason would be that he hasn't done it before, and that's not a very good reason. That would be the only reason. He hasn't done it before, and that's not a good enough reason.
If I told you Ketel Marte is going to hit 300 with 25 homers, 85 RBIs, and 30 stolen bases this year, would you be like, there's no way he could do that?
Oh, no, no, I wouldn't say that.
You'd be like, that's possible.
No, it is possible. It's just, but to your point, we just don't, when we start rattling off the names of guys who mean the most to the Diamondbacks, we never talk about Ketel Marte.
No, but
we talk about where he's going to play. We're obsessed with where he's going to play.
So, what's he, 25 years old?
But
he's so young.
We never talk about, we always mention Robbie Ray, and we mention
And Souza.
And we mention Luke Weaver and Carson Kelly and Lamb. We never talk about Ketel Marte.
The kid's 25 years old. He's got all the potential in the world to be a great player. He hits for power.
Yeah.
He does hit. I mean, he can hit home runs. He can drive in runs. He can steal. I mean, there's a lot of things that he could end up turning into the player that becomes the face of the team.
What's interesting about this, and I got this off of Zach Buchanan's Twitter account. He's the writer who covers the team for The Athletic. He wrote this morning, it sounds like Ketel Marte will play mostly center field, assuming he sticks out there, but will move into the infield frequently mid-game as changes are made. And he said he's okay with that, which is a change. When they signed Wilmer Flores a few weeks ago, again, Zach Buchanan of The Athletic reached out to Marte in the Dominican Republic and said, I just want to play one position. I don't want to be at short one day and second one day. If I play center field, I want to play center field all year. Sounds like he's changed his tune a little bit. A few weeks ago, it was, okay, that's fine. If you're going to sign Wilmer Flores and I'm going to be your center fielder, I want to be your center fielder. Now, it sounds like if they do move him in games, like you're center field for the first four or five innings, now we're going to move you to second to finish it out because you're better defensively there. It sounds like he's okay with that now, too. Like he's kind of changed his mind a little bit, or
well,
somebody
must have
said something
to him. Yeah, yeah. Listen, I still think they're in hot pursuit of Adam Jones, but they're going to wait this one out because Adam Jones is seeing if he can get a multi-year deal. I told you the Diamondbacks are not interested in a multi-year deal with Adam Jones. They're interested in a one-year deal. With a team option would be okay because that's still a one-year deal if it's a team option, but they don't want to give him a two-year or three-year deal. If he can't find a better offer anywhere else, he could end up being the center fielder for the Arizona Diamondbacks, or at least a guy, and we've talked about this with Jones too. He's not a guy that's going to play 140 games in center field. So that's where the Marte playing center, playing second could come in as well. Because if you play Adam Jones 110 games in center field,
yeah,
you could have Marte play 50 games in center field.
A tease that I thought I'd never read. He's the face of the franchise. Should Devin Booker be an untouchable trade option for the Phoenix Suns? We'll discuss next on the Burns and Gambo Show.